Where is she being, Serena?
And who am I? That's not a secret I'll never tell. You know you love me. XOXO. Gossip Girl.
Welcome back, everyone, to the beloved science podcast, Science Squirrel. Today we have a very special guest, Sam Epstein, whose Twitter handle is SamEpstein_, who wrote a paper along with co-author Lou Charcodian that was just accepted to be published in an issue of Nature Communications, a high-impact journal in the natural sciences. Since he's had to deal with a lot of random fun facts about sex in the animal kingdom while we've been trying to binge watch Gossip Girl, it is only fitting that he's my interview special guest today. Hello, Sam.
Hello, thanks for having me.
All right, Sam, so today we're going to be talking about the two-stage model of organization and activation of behavior. So the research presented in this podcast is going to be based on a paper published in 2004 by Schultz et al. Basically, using male Syrian hamsters, Schultz and colleagues were able to find evidence that gonadal hormones, that is the hormones that are better known as sex hormones, such as testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone, were secreted during puberty, causing long-lasting organizational changes in the neural underlying reproductive behavior. So to break that down, these researchers found that these sex hormones, when present during puberty, cause a long-lasting organizational change in the nervous system and the brain that then impact this reproductive behavior. So the presence in these male Syrian hamsters, particularly of testosterone during puberty, was found to masculinize and at the same time defeminize the capacity for reproductive behavior in these male hamsters.
So the interesting part of what Maria said is that there are two periods of this organization and activation, one that happens during the fetal stage of development and one that happens during puberty. To simplify it to the most basic levels, when gonadal hormones are secreted in the fetal stage of development, the brain of the female or male receives the correct sex hormones and is set up and organized so that when the same hormones flood the body during puberty, the brain can better use these hormones and activate the right mating behavior for the appropriate sex. So in the case of these Syrian male hamsters, they receive a flood of testosterone during fetal development that organizes and sets up their brain and nervous system to best use testosterone again in puberty to finish organizing the brain and nervous system and activate certain regions so that the male Syrian hamster can then engage in the appropriate male mating behavior. The neuroanatomical differences in the brain and nervous system that are produced in these stages then help to dictate the behavior later on and wire the brain in such a way so that certain behaviors are more likely for each sex.
So are y'all with me so far? Yeah, Sam.
Yeah.
All right. Given what we know, then we can talk through a couple of questions that I have. So Sam, the first question is, in hamsters, the influence of hormones and nervous system organization on mating behavior is a little more straightforward than perhaps what we see in humans. So do you think this two-stage model makes sense for humans? And to what extent do you think we can apply this type of theory to human beings?
That's an interesting question. I think, first and foremost, it's definitely easier to look at hamsters and other rodent-type animals in order to see what behaviors we would expect to see in humans, especially with development, because they have a much shorter lifespan. But I would say that it is probably helpful to have a better understanding through the hamsters how we can look at what happens to a hamster near birth compared to later during puberty, because it's much harder to assess that in humans as they grow older.
Okay, great answer, Sam. So next we can kind of think about how does the human cultural and social aspect of behavior influence this two-stage model of organization?
I would probably say it makes sense considering the role of puberty in most people's development, in the sense that you have an overall development of more sex-specific characteristics in the puberty and later states of human development. So I guess that would make sense that we're kind of seeing a similar thing with hormones and hamsters at the same timeline.
Nice, nice. So this is kind of a personal question, Sam. How does this theory make you think about your own experience with puberty?
Oh, that's an interesting question that I was not prepared for. I would say, I mean, it is interesting to think about how, I guess, testosterone has played a role in my own development, both as like a young person with very small peaks early on, like near birth, and then later again during puberty as you start to go through all of these embarrassing puberty changes. But I guess ultimately it is interesting to think about how conserved these kinds of hormonal and developmental processes are, like thinking about like the experience that you have yourself is also similar to something that a hamster is experiencing is pretty interesting.
There's unity in the animal kingdom.
There is unity in the animal kingdom.
Okay, so knowing that we go through this two-stage model of organization and activation that kind of further masculinizes or feminizes whatever sex you are set up to be, how does this idea that there are often greater differences in behavior between individuals of the same sex than between individuals of the opposite sex, like, make you think about that theory and general development as we age and move forward?
Sure. I think that it's important to recognize that while there are sex hormones and a lot of biological processes that are related specifically to sexual development, at the same time, we have to recognize that there are tons of other like biological developments that each person is undergoing. And, you know, we have a lot of more different characteristics than just relating to sex. So there are so many other things that can, you know, cause differences in behavior and appearance between different people that it's not at all surprising that sex is not like a particularly important defining characteristic when you take all the possible things that make us different together.
That's a beautiful answer. Well, thank you for all you Science Squirrel followers for listening to this fun podcast and this edition where we got to interview a good friend, Sam Epstein. That's at Sam Epstein _ for his Twitter handle.
Thank you for the shameless plug.
Of course. So signing off, XOXO Science Squirrel.